Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. All right, hey, you guys know that I'm a wrestling coach, I'm a lifelong wrestler, and I'm passionate about the sport. That being said, all wrestlers love wrestling shoes. You got to have the best shoes. And for me, my top choice is Terra Grappler. This company's only been on the market for a couple of years, and they are making a huge impact, game changers. Ever since I started wearing Terra Grappler wrestling shoes, I have not went back to any other brands. First off, man, they look good. You got to be swagged out whenever you're wrestling, but they have to be functional. The fit and form of these shoes is tremendous. When I put them on, they have a sock liner. They absolutely mold to my foot. They feel perfect. I wear them on the wrestling mats. I wear them whenever I'm lifting weights. But honestly, I could probably wear them anywhere. They feel so good on your foot. So if you're looking for a good wrestling shoe, coaches, wrestlers, MMA fighters, boxers, weightlifters, make sure that you check out Terra Grappler. All right. They also have beanies, t-shirts, socks, accessories like that. But man, I'm telling you what, this company is innovative. They are changing the game. You can go to the link in my show notes, get yourself a little discount. You can also sign up for the Champions Club. So every time you purchase or people purchase using your link, you can get yourself a discount toward wrestling shoes and Terra Grappler wrestling gear. They are the best on the market, hands down, guarantee you. Check out the link in the show notes. All right, hey, well, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Man, I'm pumped. Today I have legendary coach Tom Ryan from Ohio State University, the Ohio State University, with us. A little bit of background for those who are not wrestling people. Everybody who's in the wrestling world, we know who Tom Ryan is. But so he wrestled at actually Syracuse and then University of Iowa under the famous Dan Gable. Went on, long story short, became a head coach at Hofstra University. And then successful there, came on to Ohio State, won a national championship in 2015, multiple runner-up and top three finishes. As a matter of fact, I think, Coach, you guys have finished in the top three. What is it, like eight times or top eight, 11 of the last 12 years, top three, seven times. I mean, you guys are just rolling. It is a phenomenal program. You were a couple-time All-American yourself. And then beyond just being a great wrestling coach, Coach Ryan has a new book out, Chosen Suffering. I'm actually reading it right now. And then he is just a top-notch human being, even better than he is a coach. So, Coach, man, thank you for being on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Good to be with you today.
Yes, sir. So, well, I'm honored to have you on here. Not just because you're a great coach, man, but to learn from you. As a coach myself, I'm always trying to expand my knowledge base. And as a Christian, same thing. So, I'm pumped to have you on here, and let's just kind of start here. Just give us a little bit about your background, man, where you grew up, maybe how you got into sports a little bit, just some of your family backgrounds.
Yeah, well, it's a little different than yours, man. You know, I was raised in Long Island, New York. So about in Wantagh, New York, which is about 35 miles east of Manhattan and about 8 miles just due north of the Atlantic Ocean. Wrestling wasn't introduced in my life until seventh grade. And before then, as a kid, it was all the, you would say, all the traditional sports. You know, it was soccer and baseball and basketball. And in seventh grade, what introduced me, and I had an older brother, Frank. I also had four step siblings from second grade on. And wrestling wasn't introduced until I got cut from the basketball team. So that was the moment. And that was my first major setback when Mr. O'Leary cut me from the basketball team. And he said, look, you'd probably be a better wrestler than you were be a basketball player. So tried out for wrestling in seventh grade. And I remember, Coach, just like, probably just like you, first time in the room, I was hooked. I mean, I really, from day one, I remember thinking, this is so much fun, man. I love wrestling. So, started in seventh grade and obviously my older brother was a wrestler. So we were really, really fortunate to be on, we were on the junior high team together, and then I made varsity in eighth grade. So I was on the varsity team with him for a couple of years, and then he went on to college, wrestled in college. Actually signed at LSU, then Tennessee, and then ended up at Syracuse because of just Title IX. And that was that period of time where schools were getting cut. But fell in love with it. And then, who would have thought it's been, played such a major role in my life and the amazing people I've met and things I've learned. So, yeah, that's pretty much how it went. No basketball. Get in the wrestling room.
Yeah, well, we are grateful for the guy who put you in basketball.
Mr. O'Leary, if you want to find him. His name is Tom O'Leary was his name. Never forget, he was a great guy, but he had the white string whistle, the silver whistle. I remember him like it was yesterday. But he's grateful for him. Gave me some truth. I needed some truth. You're not very good at it, son. Try something else.
One of my Tanner Gardner, he ended up being a three-time All-American for Stanford, and Tanner was one of my guys. And same thing, he got cut in middle school basketball. Okay. Head coach before me, Coach Gonzalez, said, "Hey, I think you should go ahead and try out for wrestling," and he did. And anyway, so we're thankful for those basketball coaches that cut you guys and send you in the right direction. So. All right, so now you went on, you wrestled for Syracuse, for Gene Mills, who's a phenomenal coach and wrestler. And then, your dream was to be in that Iowa program. And not that Iowa's not so good, and they're actually a rival of you guys, but, to get to wrestle under the legendary Dan Gable, what are a couple of things that wrestling in that program did to send you in the direction that you ultimately ended up going and even carrying over to Ohio State?
Yeah, so, Syracuse was an amazing program when I was there. Like you said, Gene Smith was the head coach there, and I was living with my brother, right? And my brother has just been a driving force in my life as well. He's a great example. He was a couple-time captain at Syracuse. Now he's one of the top attorneys in the world. He's the chairman of the firm called DLA Piper, which is an intellectual properties attorney. So he was just a really good example for me. So leaving Syracuse and going to Iowa, he had 1 year left, right? He was going into his senior year at Syracuse, and I was going to my third year at Syracuse. But there was a pull in the sport that was incredibly strong for me. And despite the fact that Syracuse had offered me while I was on a full scholarship, I felt like I had to have something more. And I met with my brother and obviously called my parents. I said, "Look, I'm going to walk on in Iowa. I'm going to go out to University of Iowa." And my dad and mom supported me. My brother was like, "Go." I'm like, "Come with me." He's like, I got 1 year left. I'm going to graduate in finance. I'm going to law school." He said, "But you go." So I ended up driving out to University of Iowa and stayed in a hotel for a while. Made friends with a couple guys on the team. It was June when I moved out there. Made friends with Terry Brands. He was really my first really good friend out there. And I didn't know anybody on the team. I only knew of people. And coach, at the time, right, it was like, there was no internet. Mm. Right. I mean, it was, this was 1989. There was no like, "Oh, look at him on Flow." I didn't know their roster. I mean, there was just no way to know anything really. You're only on TV a few times a year. So, when I got to Iowa, the first person that really befriended me was Terry Brands. And he asked me if I needed a roommate, and of course I did. So I moved in with him. And living with people, when you're in an environment with incredibly motivated people that have the highest aim for their life, kind of lightning strikes. And I think the biggest thing for me, besides being around people like Terry and a bunch of other guys, right? Our team won a few national titles when I was there. And I think the biggest thing for me, where the most progress occurred, was trust. I had a blind trust in Gable and his system. And when he said something, I listened to it. And I think that, you know, I know this for sure, right? As a coach, as a parent, right? Trust always precedes real progress. Yeah. And in that place, there was tremendous trust.
Yeah, I love that, man. That's something, you know, I know that you're big on relationship building, and so am I, and that's where that trust really comes in. But I like that you said blind trust. You know, you went in and you knew that Gable had a system that was going to get people where they needed to go, and you had that blind trust.
I did. And, you know, it was just, you know, obviously the people in the room. I think, you know, when we're willing to live in a world of truth, we can make great gains. I think a lot of people don't live in a world of truth in their own minds. I think they say they see things for what they are, but then don't really act on them. So in the Iowa wrestling room, I got truth every day. But I think human beings love feedback, right? They want feedback. And in the sport of wrestling, I believe that we get feedback every workout.
Yeah.
Right. Now listen, a coach can tell you, right? Coach Park can come by and tap you on your shoulder and say, hey, you know, you got to get more in practice today. You know, you got tired halfway through, or hey, son, you know, your single leg, you kept getting in, but you weren't finishing. Right. But at some point, you know, each of us, right. It's each of us. It's our responsibility to assess these things ourselves. Mm. Right. And I think that, you know, in the Iowa restroom, I got truth. Wow. The first thing I realized when I got there, I worked out with the Steiner brothers, and I talk about the story in the book, and I didn't know these guys. They were both smaller than me. Right. One was a 34 pounder. One was a 142 pounder. And I think also for any listener, anything, I think that something that's powerful is that I never viewed myself as a walk-on. Right. Why would we label ourselves as something that we shouldn't? Right. Because I think we can lose ourselves if we allow that to happen. So when I got there, you know, two of the first guys I worked out with were the Steiner brothers. This was the first workout I've ever experienced in the Iowa wrestling room. I remember sitting in the corner of the room. I didn't know anybody, and Gable came walking over to me. Now, I know who Gable is. He doesn't know who I am from Adam, right? So he said, who are you? And I said, I'm Tom, and I want to transfer here. And this is just the way it went. He said to me, well, Tom, you're not going to get any better sitting there. He said, go wrestle with these two guys over here. So he put me with the Steiner brothers, and he put me with two people that he knew he would get a fair assessment of, you know, what I was made of.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know at the time who he was putting me with, but I know now, looking back, he put me with two of the toughest, hardest working people I've ever met. And they bludgeoned me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it went well for a little while, like 5 minutes maybe, but then it didn't go very well at all. And the thing that I took away from it, right? I remember leaving the facility, bawling, crying my eyes out. I mean, I was humbled. I was embarrassed. I was so tired. And you've probably been there, Coach, where you're so tired that you actually, and I know anyone doesn't understand wrestling, but someone, imagine, right? Someone just pulling on your neck and you're trying to pull your head up. Eventually, your neck muscles don't work anymore, right? And I remember leaving the facility and I just couldn't pick up my head. And I had my stuff and I got in my car and I turned the car on. It was a warm summer day in Iowa City. And I remember just crying and bawling my eyes out. Like, that was embarrassing. I got killed. You know, do I really want this? Right. That crossroad moment. Dude, is this what I really wanted? I drove halfway across the country, gave up a full scholarship. Am I a fool to think that I can compete at this level? Now, keep in mind, they were 34 or 42 pounders at the time. I was a 50 pounder. You know, so I should have the advantage on them. I was a year older than them. And on the way back to the hotel, because I was just got out there, I'd actually driven through the night. And I remember thinking to myself, what's going to happen? What am I going to do? Right? Should I just go back? But something in me, right, was just, this matters too much to me. And well, if I just get stronger, they won't feel stronger than me, right? And well, if I just, you know, don't get tired, then they won't have an advantage for me. And if I can just finish the shot, then they won't, their defense will be better than my offense. And it took about 90 days of two or three a day, hard sessions a day. And then you finally start to make some gains and you have some breakthroughs, and we hold on to those small little truths, right? those small little victories. Hey, I wrestled this guy today and I wrestled him last week and he beat me 50-0. And today he beat me 48-2. Right. And then the week later, it's like, hey, I wrestled this guy and mom, hey, last week, you know, he beat me 48-2. And this week he beat me 35-15. And it was just the smallest gains I held on to. And then ultimately it's, hey, I won 50-0. Right. So it's just these small little gains I was holding on to and all, you know, on the same thing that every human being in the history of time that's done well in anything is that you fall in love with it. And it means to you, it means more to you. The pains and the struggles going through them mean more to you than any barrier that you'll face can fight against you. And I was really fortunate. You know, I was fortunate to be around a lot of great people in a great environment and learn a lot of things under Gable and his system.
It's amazing how wrestling is such a microcosm of life in so many ways. And just kind of looking at mastery, you know, that's the mastery process, right? People want to go like point A to B and think that there's a straight line when really it's like zigzags.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah. So that's what you were going through.
Yeah.
The process. And those who have the heart and the mind to be able to hang on to it and to persevere and then eventually come out on the other side.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, you've probably seen this, but the guys I've coached that are really elite, you know, I think sometimes, you know, we stay in it because we're good at it, right? It becomes an identity, right? There's a lot of just identity, right? I'm a wrestler, you know, I'm a wrestler. And the ones that climb incredibly high, the Snyders, the Stevers, you know, some of these, you know, the Martins, the Tomasellos, the ones that, you know, win a national tournament as a freshman. Palmer, Jaggers, there's a love for it. Like there's a they love it. And it's moved from something I'm good at to something to what you just pointed out is mastery. You know, I it's really fun to be in an organization where you have a lot of people that want to master what they're doing. You know, so and that's the culture that we have at Ohio State. And it's the type of people that, you know, we all want to be around. It's like a little bubble. It's a bubble of people that just want to live their best life.
Yeah. That moves me right to the next question, which is this. Yeah. Tell us about your journey to Ohio State. So you start coaching, you're at Hofstra, and then how did you end up at Ohio State?
So, I mean, I can say this emphatically without any question about it. And this is like, this isn't to be goofy or, God. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how I've been able to do anything in my life. And I believe that with every ounce of me, because I know God, I know he's real. I've experienced him in my life. And there's no explanation for how a small town kid from Wauntaw, New York to end up the Ohio State wrestling coach, other than a loving God that has guided me along the way, let me fall along the way. And whether I was falling or not, his hand was always there. So the Ohio State job, number one, I wasn't by no stretch the number one choice here by the administration. I know that. I'm friends with the person who hired me, the athletic director Gene Smith, and also a friend with the head of the committee. But when I graduated from Iowa, you know, unlike you, like it wasn't like, hey, and maybe this wasn't you, but I get the sense that maybe with a dad that was so, you know, my dad wasn't a wrestler. My dad was a football player, right? It wasn't like, hey, you know, you're going to coach someday, right? Coaching wasn't something that I even thought about until my senior year in college, when Dwayne Goldman, who was the coach at Indiana, came up to me at the Big Ten championship my senior year. And he said, hey, look, I'm looking for an assistant. You know, would you like to come in for an interview? And I said, sure, I'll come in after the season. Let me think about that. But sounds like, you know, something I should look into. So it wasn't until, you know, my senior year in college at the University of Iowa, when I thought about coaching, I went on the interview at Indiana University, made a decision to coach under Dwayne Goldman. I was with Jason Kelber as well at the time. I was there for 2 years. And then Hofstra, which was a small Division I school out in New York, about 5 miles from where I grew up as a kid, that job opened up. And I had enough experience and you know, as a hometown, you know, boy, and they they took a chance on me. Of course, I had 2 years of assistant coaching experience to be the head coach. I was 25 at the time. And quite frankly, I didn't know a dang thing about coaching. Yes. You know, like we think that, well, I can shoot a high crotch. I can hit a good single leg, that we're going to be able to lead people. And quite frankly, at the time, I wasn't that good at leading myself. Despite the fact that I had some successes in life, I just wasn't ready to lead anybody else. And, but they stuck with me. And then when you start coaching, you really start to understand the power of example and the power of leadership and being truthful with people and embracing all the struggles that come along with leadership. So I was at Hofstra for 11 years. Our team was doing really well. And then Ohio State needed a coach. And they wanted this guy named Cale Sanderson, and they wanted this guy named Tom Brands, right? And they were looking at Zeke Jones, and they liked Rob Cole, and I knew who they were interested in. But ultimately, for whatever reason, Iowa State hired Sanderson. Iowa hired Brands from Virginia Tech. He was at the time. They hired him. Rob Cole stayed at Cornell. Zeke Jones couldn't get out of his contract at UPenn at the time. And then this is 15 years ago. And I got a shot. So, and I'm blessed that I got the shot. So there was a lot of things. There was so many things that had to go right for me to get the job. And they did. So even though I wasn't their first choice, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was you said it was almost God ordained or a God thing. Yeah. Right? And then you moved there. So you guys have this incredible culture, and I want to kind of combine two things. One is positive infinity. All right. Mm-hmm. So, I love mottos like TCOB. That's our team. I was one of my college mottos, take care of business. Yep. We use our team sort of life motto, but positive infinity, man. We all know that's, we think Kyle Snyder, we think Ohio State, everything you've built. So tell us about positive infinity, what it is, but also like the culture that you've built. And the reason why you guys not only were successful for a year, 2 years, like you continue that success is you have this great culture. So positive infinity and culture, man, how did all that come about and what do you do?
Yeah. I guess just in general, right. A general statement, right. The opposite of positive infinity is negative infinity. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and when we think about moving forward, progressing, what good does sabotaging our thoughts do by being negative, right? The negativity is around us everywhere. And I think, the thing that we really focus on as an organization is that we have to understand that that's real, right? That's a real thing in our lives, it's around us all the time. And our brain actually welcomes those type of thoughts because they're everywhere. And we have to really understand the battle that's taking place between our ears. And that's where the first battle has to be won. And that's, there has to be a siphon and an eviction process. The siphon process has to be, why would I allow these thoughts to into my mind? Mm-hmm. For what reason? Because we know this, right? This is just truth. Whatever lives in our mind, we will ultimately act on. Right. Our life will reflect, ultimately our life's going to reflect the things that are in our minds. So the siphon process is just so important of what we allow into our minds. And we have a saying that I'm sure many places say the same thing, but I talk about it again in the book a little bit. It's just a landlord of your mind. You've got to be a landlord of your mind on this planet, because if you don't, you're going to end up in a bad place. Right. So the first thing is understanding, listen, what is negative? Where does negative get you? It gets you nowhere. So positive infinity is the opposite of negative infinity, right? Of just see, take the good from it, no matter how hard it was, no matter how disappointing it was, dig in and pull out what's good always. Right. And to the end of time, you learn from it. And it was Kyle Snyder and a couple of other guys were on the bike and they're all in the same math class, I think it was statistics class. And they're talking about just being positive. And one of them just goes, it's positive infinity, man. Just infinity, positive infinity. I mean, that's pretty much where the term got. Colon was a bunch of guys just sitting around. But ultimately, I mean, it makes so much sense. And then culture wise, you know, when you live in a place, in an environment where people are just positive and happy to be there and grateful to be there, you create an environment of deep love, right? My guys know I love them, mm-hmm. right? And when you know, I listen, fear is a motivator. We know that, right? I mean, there's no question fear. Fear is a fantastic motivator, right? Be home at 11 or you're grounded for a week. I mean, that's fear. I mean, that's some, I mean, so fear can motivate us, but we all know, you know, it's short-lived. You know, and love is the strongest, ultimate, you know, motivator. So we just have created an environment with people. Then, of course, you know, we also siphon who we bring into the place, right? You know, we inspect the lives, not their words, but their actions of the men that we choose to recruit and bring in the place. So, yeah, positive infinity, and I would say the foundational piece of the program is love and trust. We're going to share truth and love with you. We're gonna surround you with really good examples and be examples, and we're gonna embrace the tough stuff together. And I'd say that's kind of the foundational piece of the program.
Okay, nice. Now, you mentioned this, and I want to, because we can apply this a lot of places, and I've always believed this: principles are principles. Once you know them, you can apply them anywhere. But so, what kind of person does Coach Ryan recruit to Ohio State? And connecting that, because we have businessmen that listen to this. So who are they hiring? We have college and teenagers listening to this. Who are they hanging around? So what kind of person do you recruit to your program to make sure that you guys are maintaining and building that great culture?
Yeah. So there's some things from a wrestling standpoint that we're looking for, right? And if the individual has those things from a wrestling standpoint, then, you look into things much more deeply. Right. But initially I'm watching video. We're studying the elite in the country. Mm-hmm. We're looking for aggression. Right. We know that aggression develops. We know that passivity doesn't. Someone that's willing to take chances will develop much more than someone who's afraid of taking chances. Right. If I want to get better at a single leg, but I'm afraid to shoot, I'm never going to get better at a single leg. If I want to get better at a single leg and I'll shoot 50 or 200 times in practice, I'm going to get better at it. So aggression matters. Emotional control, huge factor. We follow their Instagram, their Twitter. So not only right on their when they're competing, but just the way they carry themselves in the world, their worldview. And you can get a really good idea in a worldview and what they post, but also who they follow. Right? We can see who they're following. Why would they follow this or that? We want someone who gets along with others really well, right? So they're going to be missed, right? So once you get through the wrestling side of things, you start to, you know, when I'm in a high school and I'm walking around the school visiting a particular student athlete, I'm talking to everybody in the school, mm-hmm. right? I'm talking to the kid opening his locker. Hey, do you know so-and-so? Tell me about him. I'm talking to the janitor. I'm talking to the athletic director at the school. I'm talking to the secretary and the principal's office I'm going to meet with. So we're looking for people that are just going to be missed, right? Not the one that they can't wait to get rid of, right? The one that just, you know, brings a light to the school. So those are someone that's grateful, you know, someone that doesn't have a sense of entitlement whatsoever, that understands that they don't have a right to being great because they're trying hard. The world's full of people that try hard, and that there's no sense of entitlement. Obviously, someone that is a tireless worker, you know, that's not afraid of, right, rolling up their sleeves and just. I like someone that runs fast, right? I believe the correlation between running and wrestling, and not so much, right? We all know people that can run like the wind for a long time and can't wrestle worth a dang. But there are very few people that can wrestle really well and can't run really well. Yeah. There's a mindset, right? There's a mentality side to running that I learned. I was a cross country runner. My high school coach was one of the best high school coaches in the country, I believe. And I learned that, you know, wrestling and running have a lot of similarities, and that running is more about your mind than it is your legs, right? All my buddies were runners. I mean, I had a couple of buddies that were wrestlers, but most of them were runners, and they were tough. You can't be fast and weak. You know, if you're going to run long distance and you're going to be good at it, you're going to be a tough dude. Just, you know, general fitness level, you know, high level of fitness, high level of discomfort, you know, no fear of pain. We ask them questions. What do you want to be? I got a recruit right now that wants to be a SEAL. Kid tells me he wants to be a SEAL. It's a done deal. I can hang up the phone there and this is my guy. Right. So when you run across someone that, if you weren't wrestling, if you didn't have wrestling in your life, what would you be? Right. What would you do with your life if you could never wrestle again? Well, I'd be a SEAL. I'd be a triathlete, right? I'd be people like that, that understand pain and take a liking to it, right? Are the people that usually climb really high. So those are just some of the things I think that, you know, that we look for, you know, in prospects. Obviously academics play a big role. It's someone that rarely does excellence, you know, only filter into a small part of our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, I found a lot of the guys I've coached that climb really high, they're never in my office. And listen, it wasn't, hey, I heard you at a party last night. Never. Hey, you missed a test. You got a C on the test. Never. Not once. Bo Jordan, Jay Jagger, Snyder, all the great ones we've had here. Zero. Mm-hmm. They were raised right. They have excellence. Excellence just seeps out of them in every way. They're incredibly competitive. We have a guy on the team right now that we picked up from Cuba. I could talk about any one of my guys, right? But this guy, Echemendia, straight A's from Cuba, taught himself the language in 2 years, right? He's fluent. I know people have been in this country for way longer than that and don't speak the language yet. But it was life or death for him. And you get the sense that if someone's doing really well in school and they're working really hard, that they have a chance. It just gives you a chance, right? It doesn't guarantee anything, but it gives you a chance. So, you know, those are some of the things we're looking for. When you bring a bunch of people like that together, usually you have a really intense environment of people that want big things for their life, and they rub off on each other even more. So,
yeah, iron sharpens iron going on right there.
Iron sharpens, yeah, right.
Yeah, I follow Anthony on Instagram, and man, the guy's he's a monster. But, and I feel good, Coach, some of the stuff you're saying, because one of our, I told you TCOB is one of our quotes or mottos.
Yeah.
Another one that we use, and we have it hanging up on a huge poster in our wrestling room, but get. So, and it stands, so we say we get to, we don't have to, we get to, but gratitude, effort, and toughness.
Yeah,
attitude, effort, and toughness. So we use that and try to implement that in everything we're doing.
I mean, it's so powerful when you talk about it, right? So we have leadership meetings with our team where, you know, a lot of times guys, they're on their phone, they come in the room, you know, they put down their phone, they wrestle, they go back out, they're on their phone. But we do some, you know, we do a lot of communicating with each other. And just like you said, talking about these things, right? Bringing it to your conscience, right? Moving it from your subconscious to your conscious and actually talking about, highlighting people, getting to know. We do something called 7 good minutes, right? Where it's kind of like what you and I are doing now, only after 7 minutes, we flip the conversation. Now I'm asking you, you know, 7 minutes of questions, mm-hmm. right? And we just, guys just get to know each other and you realize that, wow, this dude's been through some stuff. You know, I just saw him as a guy with a good single leg. You know, now I understand this guy, whatever. This guy's mom went through some really tough stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and he lost his dad at a young age. And this guy had a brother that, you know, and you get to know each other. And it's a powerful thing because, you know, as you know, as a person of faith, that connection is so unbelievably important to us, mm-hmm. right? My team wants to connect with me. I want to connect with my team. They want to connect with each other. And anytime you can create a situation, a scenario where people can connect, the environment just gets that much better. It's not just a bunch of, you know, individuals, you know, moving through life. It's a bunch of individuals moving through life, and we build them up as individuals as much as we can. We build their core, each one individually, but then you've got to bring them together, mm-hmm. right? You've got to be able to blend within a group. And those are things that we, you know, we spend a lot of time on.
Love it. And I'm going to implement the 7 minutes. I'm going to steal that and implement that in our program. That's excellent.
Yeah. So I go 7 minutes for you. I'm focused on you. Hey, you know, where are you from? Tell me about your mom. Tell me the best thing about your mother. Tell me your best thing about your child. And you're answering. I keep asking. I don't get to share any of my experiences. I'm just honed in on you. At 7 minutes is up, we flip. You ask me questions. It's helped my marriage. It's helped my friendships. It's just, it's being inquisitive.
Yeah.
You know, which is another piece of, you know, an attribute of the elite, right? Is they're answer seekers.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great skill to have for sure.
Yeah.
Want to develop. All right. So now let's move into, and you talked about, you know, embracing pain, those kind of things. Let's move into your book, man. So Chosen Suffering. Tell me about the process. Like, you know, was there a point where you just said, hey, I'm going to write a book. I got to get this on paper. Like, how did the book come about? And then expound upon the book, like what you want people to learn from it. So what was the process first?
So I would say that, you know, obviously I speak at a lot of alumni events, you know, before matches I speak, our key donors are there. And some people have heard me speak. They're like, listen, you should put down your guy named Kevin Walsh. He's a good supporter at Ohio State, become a really good friend. He's like, listen, you should tell your story. You know, sometimes we go to fundraiser events together. He picks me up. We drive across the state, you know, so we've got a couple of hours together and we're just getting to know each other, kind of like, you know, we are right now. And he's like, look, I think you should tell your story. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to, you know, I just, anyway, enough people have told me to tell it. So I finally told it. And it basically started with just, you know, if I'm running, if I'm walking, I would just talk into my phone, right? And just tell, you know, stories of just experiences, right? So it was really just like brain dumping, right? It started as just a brain dump. And then it moved into, you know, some sense of organizing that brain dump. And after some period of time, you know, it's like I would have never released a book, but I had someone telling me it's time to release the book, just let it go. You know, because I think I could more of this or a little less of that. And, you know, you want it to be right. And then, you know, you released the book. So it was kind of some push by some people that I trust in my life. And you know, you should do it. And then, you know, having some help just getting walked through how you want the book to lay out. And then you release a book. So, you know, honestly, the toughest part of releasing it was it's very, I don't know, for me, it felt like very much self-serving.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, oh, you know, and I'm the opposite of that. So that was the biggest hurdle I had to get through, you know, was, you know, the arrogance that perceived my trend, it was the perceived arrogance, you know, of a book about, you know, about this, you know, the stories in my life. But a lot of the people that pushed me were strong Christians, you know, and helped me shape, you know, the mindset of simply, you know, just because you're writing, it's not about you, right? It's about how you can impact others, right? So when you have that, you know, frame of mind, it helped me a lot. And it's, you know, really the impetus of the book, right? The underlying theme of the book isn't necessarily to be about wrestling, right? It's to be about struggles. And you know, as you learn in the book, Chosen and Unchosen Suffering, right? The hard things that we bring our way and the things that come our way that are so hard, we want no part of them, but you have no choice but to be faced with them because it's a world we live in, a broken world, right? Where the worst things happen to great people and the worst things happen to people that are struggling. And that's just unchosen suffering. And it's all around our world, and I experience it, and I'm sure maybe you have at some point in your life already, but there's chosen and unchosen. And that was kind of where the book came to life for me, was that, and I didn't always view wrestling as chosen suffering, right? I mean, you heard me say before, I love it. I mean, suffering is such a negative, right, connotation. Oh, suffering, it's so hard. And wrestling is hard, but it's also beautiful. I mean, I loved it. And then when unchosen suffering came in my life, that's the first time that I really coined this phrase in my own mind that, man, I've experienced some things that are really hard that were chosen. And I've experienced this thing in my life I didn't want that was unchosen. And quite frankly, the unchosen had challenged me far more than the chosen did. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the unchosen that brought me to my knees. And it wasn't, you know, losing the national finals didn't bring me to my knees. It stunk. It was hard. You know, my team losing in 2018, my team losing in 2009, and I thought we'd have way more than one national title right now with some of the teams I've had, but we didn't. You know, in 2009, Iowa had 3 forfeits in the All-American round. It's unheard of.
Yeah.
That's the only way they could beat us. They beat us by 4 points. They had 3 forfeits in the All-American round. Hey, listen, it wasn't meant to be. It's the way it goes, right? And then in 2018, we were trying to be the team that had 5 returning champions. We beat them in the Big Ten. They beat us at the Nationals, really close. You know, those things were hard to deal with. They were difficult, but not tragic. And there's certainly a big difference between difficult and tragic. And tragic was the unchosen suffering that I experienced, which gave me a perspective of the two.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a cognition, I had an awareness of the two, but I never termed them. And I think once I'd read your terms on these, right, chosen suffering, and it makes so much sense to me. And now I have a way to categorize those or to organize those in my own mind. And I love chosen suffering. I mean, I no longer,
yeah,
but I still work out like a maniac. And
you look like it. You look lean, man. You look lean.
Yeah. It just, you know, it becomes part of who you are.
Yeah.
You right. know, your lifestyle and your system, but.
Well, and we need it, right, coach? It's like once you, it's like, I want to be hard. We have a saying, hard, but not down.
Yeah.
Right. Hard on yourself, not down on yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. And the power of just being hard on ourselves, like connecting with pain is good for us.
Yeah.
Because the world tells you the opposite, right? The world says, stay on your couch, be comfortable. Don't test the waters. Right. And the deepest part of us says, go for it. Go for it. Chase it.
Yeah.
Get uncomfortable. And then the other side, the guy on this side of the shoulder saying, don't do that. That's scary out there. Just chill out. Sit on the couch. Make yourself comfortable. On this side saying, go get it. Mm-hmm. And you have this battle going on. Our life, my life seems to, you know, the things that are the hardest are the things that bring the most value to my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah.
Like absolutely. Those responsibilities. It's like, can you imagine if you'll get up and you're excited, you're to work out this morning, right? With your team. Listen, I mean, you know, I tell my guys, imagine a life where you have, I have too many responsibilities. Okay. Imagine a life where you have none. So you officially have no responsibilities. I mean, that's a formula for a disaster. How long is that going to feel good?
Yeah. Not very long. Like a vacation, right? Eventually.
It's a vacation, a permanent vacation, right? You probably can last about 3 days on a vacation. All right, it's time to get off the beach. I got to go run, right? I got to go do something. So it's getting people really to understand, right, that man, these responsibilities, they keep you ticking. They're so good for you. Don't drop them. Squeeze the responsibilities you have. Hold on to them, you know?
Yeah, so. I love that. I've never really learned that until I'm in college. My college coach was coaching one of our classes and talked about, you know, stress, right? You stress, which is good for you, and distress, which is bad for you, right? So being under stress, but we need stress in our life. Stress is not a bad thing. So sometimes we look at these terms, pain, suffering, stress, and we have a negative connotation when really, like you said, to live, not to just to be alive, like physically, but to live.
That's good. Yeah, that's true. That's true. We need them. Yeah. And right. The reality is the world is a lot of people that drop them.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. So let's play this out, right? Let's play out you dropping all your responsibilities. How's that going to, you think that's going to make you feel better? Right. It's like, that's not going to work. You know, there was a sign on the wall in the house at rest when I got the job, right? There are 2 pains in life, the pain of regret, the pain of discipline, and the pain of regret. Mm-hmm. Right. And how true it is, right? That, you can, when we choose to do hard things that are good for us, there are blessings in those. But to drop them and pretend they're not there, man, that's only going to bring about some things and cause more struggle down the road. So we do all we can, right, to tell our guys, pick that back up, man.
Yeah.
Don't leave that back there. You're gonna it's gonna circle around someday, and you're gonna see that thing you drop back there. Don't drop it.
Yeah.
So,
and then the unchosen suffering, you know, we won't get into that too much. I don't want to get all sad. I will tell you that your story, you know, whenever you went through some deep unchosen suffering, really impacted me. I remember reading about it, and I remember it really impacted me mentally. It impacted me in a lot of ways. And as I started to have children, those type of things, and really, you know, but I'm glad that you wrote about both these things, right? I'm glad you wrote about these things. Like you said, it's not from a selfish standpoint or point of view. It's to tell your story and these stories to help people that are out there, because so many of us have experienced so many things that are similar. It may not be the exact same experience, but there are things within it that help us. So the things that you're teaching in your book, as you tell these stories, they help me to want to become a better coach and a better dad and a better husband and so all these type of things. But let's do this. What role, because I know that, and we've already mentioned a couple times that, you know, you're a strong man of faith. What role does faith play in your life as a coach and then just in general, man, as a Jesus believer and follower?
Yeah, well, it's the foundational piece of my life, right? It's become, you know, in 2004, my worldview changed. You know, I was brought to church every week as a young kid. And then I went to, you know, mom took us to church, kicking and fighting the whole way there. Right. And I never really connected with Christ in the way that I do now. And simply because I was believing because I was told to believe. That's not a really good reason to believe anything. Right. And obviously that type of belief will melt under pressure. Right. And then when I decided to take a look at explore, right, when I decided to explore whether he is real or not, through my thinking, not through me thinking because mom told me to, dad told me to, my brother was or wasn't my pastor, you know, the church I went, people around me, I believe because I studied it, because I looked at the evidence. I looked at the evidence personally, looked at the evidence of there being a God or no God. And when I stacked up the evidence, it became very clear to me that it took more faith for me to believe in no God than that there is a God. And the reason why I took the time to study and to look at it was because I was in pain, right? Pain was the catalyst. Things were going really well for me until I was 36 years old. At 36, as you know, I had a tragedy strike my family, the death of my 5-year-old son. It stopped me in my tracks, and it made me think about things that mattered more than what I was thinking about. And that's simply, right? That's simply, how the heck did I get here? I mean, how did I get here? How did I get on this planet? Where is my son? How does a 5-year-old just fall over? A healthy kid just fall over, right? So, and, you know, it caused me to think about, you know, either there's chance, well, there's a God. There's one or the other, right? One is true and one is false. Both cannot be true, right? We can't be here by accident, and have a God alongside that. So ultimately, I believed because I found evidence. I didn't close my eyes and say I'm just going to believe because, you know, I have nothing better to do because I'm really weak and I need something to hold on to or my life will have no meaning. So let me just jump on this God thing, and that's cool. I'll just do that. And then I'll live my life for a God that I don't even really know if exists or not. Mm-hmm. Right. That was so the first thing that I did was, right, you explore and you study and you read and you learn and you gather information like we do in any big decision we have. We gather information, then we decide. And once I decided, there's no looking back. Because I decided, because I had the information. And the thing for me is, since I decided in 2004, the information's only gotten stronger, right? Nothing's hit me like, oh, sorry, you left out this piece of information. You excluded that because you wanted to believe, right? Which we all know that people do every day, right? You only apply the facts that apply to the solution that you want.
Yeah.
You know, you forgot all this stuff, but no, that's okay. I'm going to see it this way anyway, because that's the way I made up my mind before I looked at any facts, right? And obviously in this scenario, with finding faith, it has to be the opposite. It has to be a clean slate first. So the clean slate led me to God. And then listen, I can't shake him. It's, he's, I mean, It's not like, well, okay, let me just, now let me forget everything I learned. That's, how's that going to work? I mean, it's just not going to work. So I mean, every scenario in my life, I try to apply, you know, the faith that I believe in. And obviously I'm a sinner, right? I'm a 51-year-old guy living on earth that is far from perfect. And I struggle, right? And everything I do isn't perfect. Every word I say isn't perfect, right? Every decision, but that doesn't mean that at all. And it's not an excuse. It doesn't mean at all that God's not who he said he was. It just means that I'm a human that struggles. Yeah. Right. Because I think one of the things that we all hate is hypocrisy, right? There's nothing worse than hypocrisy, right? Someone that says one thing and does another. Which we learn, right? The hypocrite back in the Greek days, the hypocrite was an actor, right? The hypocrite was the mask on the face. And we went and we watched plays, and the hypocrite, right? They had the mask on. They were one thing on the stage and something else. They were pretending to be something they aren't. Well, we know that Jesus didn't pretend anything. He was who he says he was. So I use it, you know, I'm in a public institution, right? So I don't run around, you know, screaming, you know, I love Jesus, right? I just my guys know where I stand, what my faith is. If they need me, they know I'm there for them. That they know I never judge them, right? That, but I'm responsible to help them grow. So I'm going to assess things they're doing in their life, but it's not from a place of judgment. It's a place of love. Which I said, you know, in the leadership absolutes is truth and love, you know, not truth because I'm better than you and I want to beat you down, but truth because I love you. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference between the two. So it's just part of me, right? It's just part of my life. And, it's a foundational piece of my life. And any chance I get to talk about God, I do. Now I don't get to do that openly in my wrestling room, but if I'm asked to speak or I'm out of my wrestling room, yeah. I mean, the first thing I am is a child of God. That's the first thing I am, right? The second thing I am is a father, a bunch of people, and a husband. And then third, I'm a wrestling coach. And I'm fortunate to be at a place that, you know, gives me a little bit of a voice, right?
Yeah.
And we all know there's probably people, not that we don't probably, we know for sure there's a lot of people far brighter than me that are sitting on park benches right now. And for whatever reason, they don't necessarily have the voice that I have, even though I could sit next to them and learn for hours and days at a time, right? But I've been given a platform and I'm going to use it.
Yeah, I love that you use your platform. First off, as a Christian, I love you that you use your platform, you know, to shine a light on Jesus and toward Jesus, you know. And also, I was thinking as you were talking there, a few years back, the Baker University wrestling coach, Cody Garcia, stud wrestler, is a couple-time Division II national champ, good friend of mine, yeah. Working a wrestling camp together. And we were having a conversation during a little downtime at the camp, and somehow it came up. We just, you know, talked about how we're decided not to keep Jesus in a box. Sometimes people are like, they're Christians, and like, okay, I'm a Christian on Sunday, but whenever I get to work on Monday, because it's a public institution, wherever, I can never talk about Jesus. And so they always kind of keep Jesus in a box. And not that I'm a public school teacher, right? So not that I can go in openly tell people about Jesus, but
yeah,
permeates every area of my life.
Yeah. You know?
And so if we were to look at, and I'm not comparing Christianity and Islam, but a lot of times if somebody is a Muslim, like we openly know that they're a Muslim and that's okay. But a lot of times as Christians, we want to hide it, right? And yeah, it's just part of who you are. And so
yeah,
it is, then it affects your decisions, your actions, all those things. And so it's great to know. And I'm glad that your guys, even if we can't have those one-on-one conversations, they can see that, they know that, they know who you are, and they know that you care about them. You know, so all these things tie in together. And I appreciate seeing you as a coach because that's a role model for me.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, it's almost impossible to leave it behind. And it's not an outpouring of, you know, judgment. You're not a follower. You don't know Christ. It's just simply that the principles that he lived by, when they're studied, right? We both know this, right? I'm sure you would admit to this, right? We both have come across people in our lives that don't know God and wish they did. But I've never come across a man that knows him and wishes he didn't.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't know anybody that I don't know anyone that knows him and is like, man, I wish I didn't. I never looked into this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so yeah, it's just it's you know, it's a part of our, it's the essence of why I'm alive. I believe that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's responsible for my birth, for giving me the amazing things that I have. Right. My family, you know, at some point, and this is the amazing grace, right? When you know he is who he said he was, you know, at some point, I mean, my wife and I became just grateful that we had our son for 5 years. Like, how can that happen?
Yeah.
Right? How can I not live in just pure anger and hate for God? Right. How can, you know, people, I have friends who've lost children to brain cancer, right? Car accidents. And they're on their knees just praising God, because when you get the facts straight and you realize that he's real and all the things that he is, it certainly overpowers the times when he didn't when he didn't necessarily save someone you wished he did.
Yeah.
Right. I knew, right. I'm sure the God that you know and the God that I know are the same God. And it's like, well, sure, he could have saved my son. Of course he could have. But he didn't. So does that mean that I get the right to, you know, spend the rest of my life using that as a crutch and hating God? No, it doesn't mean that at all. I've seen too many things he's done that just allow me to be grateful for what I do have.
Yep. That is a powerful testimony and example for all of us. I mean, and if you're a parent, you know, it's even deeper, you know,
yeah.
Once you have your own children. But all right, so kind of switching topics real quick. All right, you are a high level human being. You coach a lot of high level human beings. I love to study success habits of people. If you could give us a few, man, like what are some essential must-haves in your daily routines or habits towards success, whether that's a morning routine or working out, whatever, just what are a few like non-negotiables for you for success?
Yeah. Start your day right. I mean, start your day right. So right now I'm in a friend of mine gave me the Bear Grylls Soul Fuel. Actually, I got it right here. This thing's incredible. So for anyone that wants it, I don't know where you probably can't see it because I got my thing on. Anyway, so I'm not really in the wrestling room. I'm in my house. So start every morning. I mean, if you got a busy day, you know, I think so I would say this, the biggest thing is make your day what you want it. Mm. Right. Like you said, get to, right. Get to's first, because there are some things that, listen, sorry, welcome to the world. There are some have to's also.
Yeah.
That's just, unfortunately, sometimes that's just the way it is. And sure, I could try to flip a have to a get to, right? But if I don't like the have to and I have to do it, it's not a get to, right? So there's going to be some things in our lives that are have to's. Well, make sure that your day has some get to's also,
mm-hmm.
right? Otherwise, it's every day is monotony of just constant have to. So, you know, the power of seeing what we want in a day is important, and knowing that we have control of that to some degree. It may not be, you know, all 18 hours we're awake, but some of those 18 hours have to be get-tos. Mm. So my get-tos, wake up in the morning and I come up in this room before I go anywhere. And we got some early practices. If I've got something going on at 8, I got to get up at 6:45, get 6:30, 5:35. And start with something that's uplifting. Right? Something that aligns you and prepares you for what you're going to walk out of. You're going to walk out of your house and you're going to get bombarded with people that may not think the way you think, may not see things the way you see things, but you're going to be ready for it. So an uplifting. So I always start in the morning. Every morning starts with some soul. It's called soul fuel. And typically, unless it's raining, a walk. Just clear my head, man. I just start the day with a walk. Okay, so you got to get up a half hour earlier. Well, if you view it as it gets you, then you'll get up a half hour earlier and you'll do it. I work out every day, right? I think that working out is just really important for us. It doesn't have to be something that's miserable. It doesn't have to be a Peloton ride where you're on the Peloton and you're torturing yourself. You know, and I love the Peloton, but you know, if you're dreading it constantly, then it's going to be a deterrent, you know? So just some sort of either walk or exercise. And then I think you end the day right. Right. You end the day with you something that settles you. You know, I think those are things that, you know, whatever those things are in each of our lives, I think we just got to make sure that, you know, that we're laying out a day that is a day that is exciting. Mm-hmm. And not every moment of it, but a day that, you know, is, like I said, get to. You know, I don't know about you. I like to plan my vacations. I like to have something to shoot for. Not every family can go on vacation, but even if it's you know, a walk in the park with the kids, you know, consider that a vacation, right? Not everyone's in the same means, you know, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah,
I think something I do. I think it's very helpful, not only in a year, but I see myself wrestling my grandchildren. I don't have any yet, right? But I see myself, like I see it, right? I'm going to will myself to that. That they're not going to have a grandpa that can't get up, whose legs are too weak to carry his own body weight, right? Because I didn't take care of myself, right? I'm going to, and listen, it's not always because I didn't take care of myself, right? Sometimes it's just the way it is, right? Yeah. I mean, we age differently, right? Maybe sometimes we don't even possible. But if it's in my control, that's something I see. I see myself wrestling them and then being like, gosh, darn it. Grandpa's still kicking my butt. What in God's name's happening? You know, so I think we just got big dreams. You know, big dreams that keep us, you know, on a course, you know, in a world that wants to derail them. Mm-hmm. You know, so some short-term things, some long-term things. You know, I listened to this Peterson, like, listen, this guy, Jordan Peterson, yeah. And he just talked, you know, he just talks about this, and he talks about, you know, painting, I mean, treat yourself like someone you care about. You know, treat yourself like, right? Like treat yourself like someone, like if you really cared about yourself, who would you have in your life and what would you do and where would you go? And, you know, and it's just so simple, but it's so simple. But when you hear simple stuff, it's so profound because we're constantly bombarded with things coming at us. And unless we take some time to think, we're stuck in the world of things coming at us. And quite often they'll take us to the wrong place, you know?
Very good, man. There's a lot of good stuff in there. A lot of like little nuggets of wisdom, even the vacations, man, that like got my mind going because right. We didn't go on vacations when I was growing up and I didn't understand or value it. And my wife's family did. So my wife and I, like, those are things that we build in, right? We build into our kids and it's incredible. I love it, man. And it's a tradition, but of course she
traditions too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like traditions.
Yes.
And we're me and my two sons, like the other day, I texted them, like, listen, let's, because they all have houses now. Right. So all my kids, you know, there was only one house. Now they each have their own house. So it's like, okay, let's start this tradition. Each year, we'll help each other put up the Christmas lights. Mm. Let's just get together, you know, because you need, you know, which is, so we're starting. Right. So, it's a reason to get the boys together and, you know, mess up our houses.
Yeah. Love it. All right, coach. Last thing I always do on here, and I appreciate your time big time. I'm grateful for it. But we're athletes, man. Got to have fast feet, right? So I'm going to make you be quick on your feet here. You can choose all three of these or you can just expound upon one of them. But I want you to tell me about a highlight, a hero, or a hardship in your life. A highlight, hero, or hardship, and just expound upon it.
Yeah, so I would say the who I'll choose is has two. He's my hero and hardship, right? They fall in the same. And that was my 5-year-old son, Teak. I've met a lot of amazing people on this planet, from Dan Gable to Gene Mills, right? A lot of amazing wrestlers and just men, business leaders. Scott Arnell, Jack, I can name so many people that have touched my life. But no one in a profound way, like my 5-year-old son. He loved wrestling. He was a light in my life. He was a friend. And he was just here not long enough. That's it. In 5 short years, he changed the way I see the world, unlike any other human being could. Mm-hmm. So he's my heartache. And he's my hero. Teague William Ryan, born December 1st. 1998, died February 16, 2004. Life wasn't long enough, but long enough to change my life. And through him, I'll touch a lot of lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is, it's tough and great all at the same time, man. So absolutely. Now, Coach,
we both know we'll see him again, man. He'll be just up there waiting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
He's waiting. So,
yep. All right. Well, I just want to say thank you so much. Now, where can people find you and follow you online? The Ohio State wrestling team, maybe your own Instagram.
Yeah. So I've got Buckeye158 is Twitter and Instagram for me. Wrestling Bucks is, you know, our program. You can follow the Ohio State wrestling team. And then if you're interested in the book that has a bunch of these stories, it's chosensuffering.com. So just chosensuffering.com, you can get the book. And if you've got someone in your life that's struggling, you want them to write a note. If you order through Chosen Suffering, you just put a note in there's a place in the ordering that you can say, hey, my buddy Joe just lost someone. My buddy Joe's struggling. Can you send him a note of encouragement? And I'll just sign the book and send it out to him. So we've got it set up.
Great idea. And for those listening, I will put those Instagram and Twitter handles in the show notes. And then I will put chosensuffering.com in the show notes so you guys can get on and order the book. And again, Coach, man, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. This has been phenomenal. As soon as we get off here, I'm going to be like taking down some notes. I always encourage everybody, don't leave it up to your mind. Take notes. You gave me a lot of notes to take.
Yeah, man. Good to be with you. God bless those kids, man. You're in a fun time, huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And thank you. All right. Well, everybody, this has been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, shine his face upon you. And until next time, peace. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, that's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up, and this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, T-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love, and God bless.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.